The Knoxville Symphony Orchestra is presenting a concert Thursday and Friday night. On the program is Beethoven's Egmont Overture, the Symphony No. 5 by Shostakovich, and Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto, performed by violinist Robin Bollinger, who is in the studio with me today. Welcome to WUOT, Robin.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Have you ever visited Knoxville before?
I haven't. I've been to Chattanooga a number of times, but this is my first time in this part of the state.
Excellent. Well, welcome. I understand this isn't your first time being on the radio. You were actually an artist in residence with Performance Today.
I was indeed.
Yeah, tell me more about that. What did you do there?
Oh, gosh. That was a really fun experience. Mm-hmm. We recorded 3 days' worth of shows for Performance Today. And we pretended that it was in 3 separate days, but really it was just 1 marathon day of recording.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, Performance Today is such an important venue for classical musicians. So It was such an honor to get to spend the day with Fred Child, the host, and work with that whole team to record, you know, various musical selections and also just chat.
Yeah. What are some of the pieces that you performed?
I played a Mozart sonata with my good friend, pianist Dina Weinstein. I also played a movement of Bartok's solo sonata for solo violin and ended the whole residency with a performance of the legendary Bach Chaconne.
Nice. Now, I read that you made your Philadelphia Orchestra debut at the age of 12. Was that as a soloist?
It was indeed. Wow. Yeah, the Philadelphia Orchestra has a long-standing youth competition called the Albert M. Greenfield Competition. Mm-hmm. I started competing in it when I was 7.
Wow.
I finally won when I was 11. And the prize is for young students to get to perform a solo with the Philadelphia Orchestra the following season. So I played the first time when I was 12 and won it in the next category the subsequent year. So I got to play again when I was 14. That's really special because my father is in the Philadelphia Orchestra. He plays bass trombone. And my mother is a violist, and she used to sub with the orchestra a lot. So not only was this, you know, sort of my dad's home and my, you know, home away from home, but it was a lot of important people, a lot of musicians that I grew up looking up to. And it was so, so exciting to get to walk out on that stage just myself.
Yeah, I can imagine. Were you nervous or just excited?
I mean, I was 12.
Yeah.
So I think I was mostly excited. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, you know, that's a high pressure, high stakes environment for anyone, regardless of how old you are. But that was a moment I'd been dreaming of since I was a little girl. So
absolutely.
I was mostly just ecstatic to be there.
And what did you perform?
I played Sarasate's Der Grüne Weißen.
Oh, fun. That's a fun piece. You are currently touring your performance project entitled Chaconne, The Bass of Time. Tell me more about this project.
So this project is near and dear to my heart. I'm really interested in challenging the ways that we present and perceive classical music. And I'm really interested in getting people of my generation interested in classical music. And I think oftentimes it can be a little bit daunting to be told to sit down and be quiet and just sort of take in this often really complex and challenging music. So I wanted to create a format that could invite people in to make the music a little more personal and to make it a little bit less heady or a little less scary to approach. Mm-hmm. So I find that I'm most moved by a performance when I have some sort of relationship, whether it's to the performer or to the composer, or just to have a sense of the story of why this moment matters. And so in Chaconne, The Bass of Time, I put together 4 pieces from various eras of classical music and tried to tell the story of this remarkable form, the Chaconne, across all 4 of these pieces.
So it spans like several centuries?
Yeah. So the first piece is the Passacaglia by Heinrich Ignaz Franz von Bieber. Uh-huh. It was written in, I think, about 1675. So the music goes from there all the way through Bach, through Bartok, and then finishes with the Berio Sequenza, which was written in 1976.
You were performing Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto with the Knoxville Symphony. When was the first time that you learned this piece?
I learned this piece the first time when I was 15. And it's one of those pieces that, as a young violinist, you just dream of. It's sort of the ultimate grown-up piece. and so I was so excited to get to learn it for the first time as a kid. And I played it a lot then, and played it with some orchestras, and got a lot of mileage out of it, some competitions. And I'm so happy to be coming back to it now.
How was the playability of this concerto? Because I know it definitely sounds really difficult.
It's tricky. I think one of the biggest difficulties of this piece is just the sheer endurance of it. It's not that the piece is so long. It's just that it's so taxing for the violinist. You're just kind of on the whole time. I mean, the piece it's not short. It's probably about 35 minutes, but the violin plays for just about all of it. Mm-hmm. And it's written for such a big, lush orchestra that to cut through that is a challenge.
Yeah.
But it just feels so great to play. I mean, it's sort of like running a marathon at the end, that, you know, just all the adrenaline and all the endorphins are going. And it's such beautiful music that it makes all the muscle fatigue worth it.
Do you have a favorite movement?
Oh, it's sappy, but whichever one I'm playing.
They're all good.
They're all good.
And so also in the studio with me today, not just Ms. Bullinger, but we also have music director Aram Demirjian. Didn't mean to ignore you over there, Aram.
That's okay, actually. Honestly, I was so captivated by what Robin was saying that I was like, you don't even need to ask me anything.
She has done so and is doing so many interesting things, for sure. But I am really excited about this symphony that you have programmed, the Shostakovich Fifth Symphony. Now, why did you pick this work for this concert?
I picked the Shostakovich Fifth Symphony just in general because it is one of my favorite pieces in the entire orchestral repertoire. It is an amazing piece of music. On a personal level, it's actually a very important piece of music to me because, you know, Robin was talking about transformative experiences when you are a young musician. And I played this symphony for the first time when I was 16 years old. And it was the first time that I really experienced music really operating on a higher level. It was about more than the notes on the page. It was about history. It was about humanity. It was about personal struggle. And I really think that Shostakovich is very much a composer of our time because his music, it is visceral. It is direct. It is highly personal. And I find that it is easy to connect to.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of the Fifth Symphony, he wrote it in 1936, and he was writing in the Soviet Union, which was not an easy place to be an artist. It wasn't an easy place to be a person, but it was not an easy place to be an artist in any respect, particularly at this time.
Mm-hmm.
And he had just gotten panned by Pravda, which was the state paper. I think it was saying music or muddle about his opera Lady Macbeth of Matensk, and this music was condemned as being formalist, you know, not glorifying the state, which was, artists could be imprisoned and executed in the Soviet Union for such accusations. So Shostakovich had written an equally avant-garde Fourth Symphony, which he canceled the performances of because he was afraid, and he... In writing the Fifth Symphony, he was writing for his life. Quite literally, he was composing for his life. And it was presented by the promoters as basically a Soviet composer's response to just criticism. And so, on the surface, it glorifies the state.
Mm-hmm.
But as like with so much Shostakovich music, it was written in code so that the oppressed Soviet population could hear the validation of their own struggle underneath the veneer, that the piece sounds like how people had to live. There's so much in there. There are these depictions of what could be just like this emotionally barren landscape. There's this rhythm that keeps coming back in the first movement, yum, bum, 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 which I call it the rhythm of inevitability. It's just, there's so much of it, it's just there.
Mm-hmm.
But then the last movement ends seemingly triumphantly. But Shostakovich said, you know, you've got the trumpets blaring, but then you've got the strings underneath that playing the same note 252 times over again. And talk about physical exhaustion. I've played it in an orchestra. It is painful. to play. And Shostakovich explained that as, it's as though you're kneeling on the ground, somebody is standing over yelling at you, your business is rejoicing, your business is rejoicing. And then you go sauntering off with your head and shoulders hung low saying, my business is rejoicing, my business is rejoicing, my business is rejoicing. And it was through his music that Shostakovich endured through the horrible anti-speech conditions of the time and the country in which he lived.
And then also on the program is Beethoven's Egmont Overture. Beethoven wrote so many overtures. What's the story behind this one?
So this one was written as the overture to incidental music to a play by Goethe, who Beethoven admired, revered. And like so many of the characters on which Beethoven wrote, he wrote about characters either from history or from literature that inspired him and corresponded with his philosophy on the world. Beethoven in his time was very much a progressive and idealist, like of the Enlightenment period, mm-hmm. truly. And it's not a surprise how Beethoven, who at first revered Napoleon as being a liberator of the people and then abandoned him when he crowned himself emperor. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Beethoven, who notoriously would refuse to doff his cap when a nobleman walked by him mm-hmm. on the sidewalk because he believed, I am just as good as that person, I am just as worthy as that person. It's no surprise that Beethoven gravitated to the story of the Count of Egmont, who was in prison, who led a revolution of his people against the oppressive Spanish Empire at the time. This is in the 1500s. Beethoven is writing it 200 plus years later. So you have the Count of Egmont, who is a martyr in this story. And so the overture depicts the conflict between the two sides using different melodies representing both sides. But then at the end, although the Count of Egmont loses his life, there is triumph of his people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's not hard to imagine that Beethoven, who felt very misunderstood in his time, and who especially at this time in his life, he felt a great sense of personal injustice. He was losing his hearing. There were a lot of problems in his family. You can see how Beethoven may have identified with this figure. And also, in a tie-in to the Shostakovich Symphony, the Egmont Overture was actually kind of the unofficial anthem of the 1956 Hungarian Revolution.
I did not know that. Yeah, it's like two composers writing about injustice, but centuries apart.
People ask, why do we play music that was written hundreds of years ago? Because historically, the same themes mm-hmm. can come up again and again over time, and that's why some music is just truly timeless.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Robin, I have one more very important question for you. What is your current Netflix binge show?
I'm watching Friends for the first time.
No way. I'm so happy for you.
This tells you how young she is.
Fantastic. Now, which character do you identify with the most?
Oh, I might be a little bit of a Monica.
Yeah.
But my favorite character is Joey.
Fair enough. Robin and Aram, it's been a delight talking with both of you. Thanks so much for visiting us here at WUOT. I've been talking with violinist Robin Bollinger and maestro Aram Demergen. Robin is performing Tchaikovsky's Violin Concerto with the Knoxville Symphony Orchestra tonight and tomorrow night at 7:30 at the Tennessee Theater. More information is available online at knoxvillesymphony.com or by phone at 291-3310.